Welcome to the Store Builders Podcast, the place where we talk to industry experts and successful store owners about what it takes to build a thriving e-commerce business. Every episode, we deliver the raw, unfiltered recommendations that will catapult your store to new heights. Ready to get serious about expanding your e-commerce empire? Well, then let's get to work. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Store Builders Podcast. I have another great conversation with Mr. Chris Lemma for you today. And today, we're going to be talking all about copywriting, and more importantly, copywriting mistakes that a lot of store builders are making that they might not even be aware of. So when you think about e-commerce, copywriting might not be the first consideration that comes to mind. I mean, a lot of people picture an e-commerce store as just this screen that is filled with beautiful imagery of products and then maybe some brief descriptions, some bulleted lists of the specifications or the product features, and a price and a buy button. And that is probably the limitation of how most people view copywriting in an e-commerce setting. But that couldn't be further from the truth, because there is a lot of marketing material that goes into making the sale, and the storefront is just one piece of that. So you might have copy requirements for a pay-per-click ad, like a Facebook ad. You're going to need a headline, description, and a call to action for that. You may have email marketing considerations, like an abandoned cart campaign or a lead nurture campaign that takes a prospect and turns them into a customer. And you know, you might also just have some product descriptions that are more entertaining or more robust than you might expect. So the bulleted list is just part of it. But really, a lot of brands are going into an area where they're using stories to sell products and entertain site visitors and ultimately form a connection that leads to a purchasing decision. So today, we have established that copywriting is important for e-commerce store owners and store builders, and today's conversation with Chris is all about some common copywriting mistakes that a lot of folks are making they might not be aware of. By listening to this conversation and taking notes and putting Chris's advice into practice, you can put yourself in a position where you have a leg up against your competitors, or you are in a position where you can help your clients get a leg up on their competitors as a store builder who is a savvy copywriter. So without further ado, let's get into the conversation with Chris. And as always, I'll be back at the end of the episode to tie everything together and share resources for everything that we cover from the perspective of tools or articles or other resources that'll help you improve your copywriting skills as a store builder. So no further delay, let's get into the conversation with Chris, and I'll see you on the other side. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Store Builders Podcast. My name is James Sowers, and I'm joined as always by Mr. Chris Lemma. Chris, how's it going in your neck of the woods today?
I'm doing great. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you too. Looking forward to our conversation today, which is all about a handful of copywriting mistakes that people make when they're standing up an e-commerce store. And I know that that might not be intuitive to a lot of folks. You might say, hey, it's just a collection of products that I put online for people to buy. There's a picture, there's a price, and there's a buy button, right? How much copy can there be? But really, there are a lot of things that require the written word to deliver a message that can make or break a sale and make the difference between somebody buying and somebody going somewhere else. Things like pay-per-click ad copy and item descriptions and email marketing, abandoned cart emails, all that kind of stuff. So today we're going to focus on mistakes that people make when they're producing those things. And specifically for store builders, if you have a client that's asking you to deliver on this front or provide some strategy or some advisory on this front, making sure that you don't fall into the same traps that a lot of stores do. And I know you have some ideas here. So one thing that I've heard you say is that a lot of store owners are too isolated. Their copy is too isolated. And what do you mean when you say that?
Normally when I'm talking about it, I use the phrasing, people are inside out or outside in. And inside out means, and this is what I mean by they're too isolated. Right? The narrow focus is just about themselves. So they sit here and they obsess about their product all day long, right? So invariably, when they go to write the copy, it's inside out. It's what I know from the inside, right? I'm inside the company, I'm inside. I know certain things about the product, and then I bring it out to you, right? And of course, my recommendation is the exact opposite. Go from the outside in, which is what are customers talking about or how are they feeling about things and bring it in, which means you can't sit in your little hovel and be like, ooh, these are all the facts I know and figures I know about my product. You go to Reddit and you're like, okay, let's say that you're buying, I'm a big headphone fan, right? So let's say you're buying headphones. You could start the copy, right, on your headphone, and you could start writing some very specific features and decibel levels about headphones, right? Only to, if you go to Reddit and you see what people are talking about, right, in headphones, they're not talking about decibel levels. So you have to get yourself out of the building. You got to get yourself to where people are talking and not sit in your little isolated space. And you have to understand, what do people care about? What are their biggest concerns? What are the questions, right? One of my favorite all-time features when I'm reviewing headphones is, how well do they do when I'm laying in bed? Because I'm going to put on my headphones maybe before I take a nap or before I go to sleep. And no blog posts that are reviewing these headphones say anything, but invariably what happens, right? You put on the headphones, especially if they're over-the-ear headphones, and then you bend or turn and you apply pressure, and all of a sudden either the cuff pops off or you end up with pain all around your ear because you're like, ah, oh, this was never designed. So when you go to Reddit and you start seeing people ask questions about it, like what happens when this and this, you go, ooh, I need to go back. Now my copy says the single best headphones for people who lay in bed, right? Or it's just a bullet item that says, won't hurt your head, right? When you're laying, you know, in bed or sitting on a couch, right? Resting your head. Whatever it is, your copy becomes that much more powerful when you're doing it from the outside in rather than the inside out.
Just drawing from, I have a little bit of a background in sales. And what we're always trained is, before you finish your thought, answer the question, so what that means to you, or answer the phrase, so what that means to you is, finish that sentence. So you're talking about, hey, these are noise canceling headphones that will block out noise up to however many decibels. And what that means to you is, when you're sitting on the train heading into downtown New York City to go to your job and you're trying to listen to an audiobook, you're not going to hear the people having a conversation next to you. You're not going to hear the screaming kid down in the other end of the car. None of that's going to get through. So that's like, I think that's what you're talking about, where you say, don't isolate it on the specs. Talk about the person who's actually going to be buying the product and relate it to what kind of outcome they're going to get in their life.
Yeah, for sure.
Perfect. So I think maybe in line with the next point that we want to talk about today, the specs might be in the line of too many adjectives. And what you've advocated in the past is use more verbs. So what's your thought process there behind that recommendation?
So I'm not against adjectives. When you start writing silliness, right? I mean, there's no other way to describe it. When you start writing world-class, comma, best in class, you know, or best made or handmade, comma, and you start stringing together this very adjective-friendly phrase, it slows people down, right? When they're reading, most of us do a lot of skimming. When you're looking at a product and you're just, oh my God, these people are so full of themselves and they still haven't told me what the heck this is or how it works or what it does, right? And when you shift from adjectives, it's not that you can't use an adjective, especially, again, if we're talking about headphones, having the word light, as in it's not heavy, can be powerful in the right place. So it's not that you don't want an adjective. It is that you want to use your adjectives without commas, right? So if you have to put a comma between two adjectives, you went too far, right? So limit your adjectives. And then really, what does it do? It powers this. It silences this. It controls this. The verbs are what make it powerful. When you're describing your products, when you're writing product descriptions, and you're not focused on the adjectives, but you're focused on the verbs, you end up just a natural byproduct. You end up with more powerful statements, more compelling statements, right? When all of your verbs are passive verbs, forms of to be, right? Where you're like, it is, it has, it is, they are. And you're like, okay. But if something accelerates or if someone silences or someone aggregates, or, well, probably not aggregates, that's a word that I wouldn't use in common parlance, but I wouldn't use common parlance either. So you want to figure out, right, what are the right words that the verbs that get you to the place where someone goes, I want that, I need that, I must buy that now. If you're a store builder, right, you may not be asked to write copy, but you may be asked to put copy in. And when you put that copy in, it's going to be your first chance to look at it and go, let me see if I can add a little bit of constructive advice here, right? And you can do it very gently. Right now, obviously, some store builders are asked also to provide copy, right? So that's part of your services, whatever. But even if you're not invited to provide copy, you can definitely provide some feedback. I notice you're using a lot of passive verbs here and a lot of adjectives. Given our background experience, we might suggest that you consider something more like this. And immediately you become a more valuable vendor, a more valuable partner in that store's success because you're getting away from adjectives and driving towards verbs.
And in the same vein, if you're going to subcontract that part of the project out to a copywriter, you can validate their performance and know if they are a high quality e-commerce copywriter or if there's somewhere else that you should be seeking out to help you out with that aspect of the product. So it kind of helps you protect yourself as far as being responsible for that final client deliverable and the performance of the site overall, because copy is a big part of that. And what I love about verbs is verbs, by their very nature, are tied to action. And when you want someone to take action, as in purchase your product, starting with an action verb is a great way to get that momentum going, because it's tied to action, it's tied to change. And at a lot of times, at the very foundation of a purchasing decision is, I want to see a change in my life. And you're communicating what that change is to me by saying, these headphones will eliminate distractions when you're in the workplace, or something like that. So I love that tip. And you know, I think the next tip that we're going to cover might be, at least when I first heard it, was a little counterintuitive, because it's tied to having too many facts. It seems like naturally you would want to present the facts to a buyer. You want to say, hey, we have a higher crash test rating than our competitor, or something like that. But you have a clarification or maybe an expansion on that point that clears things up for me and for the folks at home.
It's not that facts are bad or wrong, just in the same way that adjectives are not bad or wrong. But the mistake is thinking that that's what moves people to make a purchase. That's what makes people push the button. More often than not, it doesn't. So you could put a product that you're trying to sell, and then you could put, here's a bulleted list of all, here's the weight and the dimension and every fact, right? And people go, okay, it turns out that I can even compare a lot of products on these particular dynamics and still be left with, I don't really know, right? So what ends up happening? Customers are moved then, if you're just playing the facts game, they are moved by price, which means you are commoditizing your own product. If the only thing people are choosing between you and someone else's version of the product is price, you don't have a lot that you can do there. But that's where the power of story becomes so powerful, because if you don't get into the game of facts, like, it's not that you don't have facts. It's not that you don't have, here's the weight of the item, or here's the, you know, whatever, right? You can still have some facts. But what you're really doing is wrapping all those facts and everything else about that product into a story, into a compelling story. Several years ago, there was a storytelling project. A person got a whole team of people to go out to swap meet and to buy things for under $2. They bought all sorts of crazy stuff, and they brought these little knickknacks back. And then they said, okay, your job, right, is to write a story. Maybe you tell a story about why this is important to you, or maybe you tell a story about the background of how you imagine it could have happened, or maybe you just write a fancy story about this little porcelain pig, whatever it is. And then they put it on eBay with the story. And those things sold for thousands of percentages more than what they paid for when they bought them at these little swap meets. Because stories intrigue us, stories engage us, stories capture our attention. Stories create want. Oh my God, I have to have that. It so well aligns with who I am and how I think about things and what I care about. I have to have the porcelain pig. And so instead of paying $2, which is what someone else bought it for, I paid $200. And you go, that's insane. Who would pay $200? Well, you got to read the story. Part of the dynamic is, if all you're doing is selling on facts, you're missing out. The copywriting tip here, right, is create the story, tell the story, right? That makes this more interesting and compelling. I smoke a lot of cigars. And when I hand someone a cigar, almost always one of the things I do is tell them the story about the cigar, right? Like, here's the background, here's how it came into being. And they enjoy smoking the cigar that much more, because they're no longer just saying, oh, I'm puffing a cigar, right? They're like, I'm participating in this story that you've crafted, that you've told me. And then they remember it. They also remember it later. They're like, I want that one. It was this thing and that, because remember this, and they remember the story. If you want memorable products, which pretty much every store owner you work with, right, as a store builder, they live for that. They want people to remember their product and come back, then encourage them to tell the story around the product.
Right. And I think one thing that might hammer this home for the store builders that are listening is that first point you made around, basically, if you are a jack of all trades, then you really specialize in nothing. And if you go to a client and you say, I make landing pages, then you sound like thousands of other consultants and freelancers out there that make landing pages. But if you come to them and you say, I specialize in making landing pages for evangelical churches, and I turn it around in a day for $1,500, well, suddenly you have a differentiated value proposition. You have a unique niche that you're serving And that lets people know, oh, this is the guy I want. Then you start to stand out. And what you're advocating for is to do that in an e-commerce setting with stories, which we've been telling since the dawn of time. And the power behind stories is it immediately lets a potential customer know, it gets them thinking about, hey, I want to put myself in the shoes of the person in the story you just told. I want that outcome. I want to have those kind of results. And this is the product that can get me there. So I love that tip. I know, like I said before, it was counterintuitive, but I think now that you've gone through it, it's going to make a lot more sense for somebody who is sitting at home and who's a store builder serving clients. So that will lead us into, because stories, I think, give it that personal touch. And that leads us into our next point, which is all about how a lot of e-commerce stores get that kind of stuffy, faceless corporate vibe. And you're here to tell us today that that's not the way to go, unsurprisingly, based on the last tip about stories. I know you have some specific insights to share there.
Yeah. So it's no shock, right? If I'm telling you to write stories, I'm also going to tell you, stop being so perfect, so corporate in your write-up with no personality. When your personality is gone from your content, right? When you're writing copy and you're trying to sell something and your personality is gone, you lose the connection, right? Remember, the person who is buying is always a human. You're not selling to a robot yet. So you're a human writing copy, or you're software developer who's working with copywriters, either on your staff or because your customer has come and brought stuff to you. But these are humans writing content for humans reading content. So this is all a human dynamic. And yet, you'll start reading some websites, some e-commerce sites, and you're like, were there humans involved? This looks like it was computer generated, right? This is horrible. There's no personality. One of my favorites, which we'll link in the show notes, if you go to styleguide.mailchimp.com, right? Styleguide.mailchimp.com. And you go to slash, and you'll see it in their nav on the left, right? You go to voice-and-tone. But it's also voice and tone is one of the sections. They have an entire guide for how to write content, right? For if you work for MailChimp and you want to know how to write copy for MailChimp, they have a massive guide, right? And they will talk to you about, hey, be funny, but don't be silly. Be confident, but don't be cocky. Be smart, but not stodgy, right? Informal, but not sloppy. Helpful, but not overbearing. Expert, not bossy, right? Weird, but not inappropriate. And you go, this is awesome, because you can look at anyone's sentence. You may not be able to explain how to do it, but if you look at a sentence and you just say, now, would you call that just weird or inappropriate? Or would you call that, you know, fun, but is it also silly or not? And most people read it and go, no, that's too silly, right? Pull it back. Let's rewrite again. You may not be able to know how to do it, right? But these guys give for their brand, right? For what they're doing. They give you a great guide on tone and voice and how to write. And I read this a couple years ago and I was like, oh my God, every company needs one of these. But e-commerce stores need it the most, because every bit of your writing is meant to drive the conversion. And I think sometimes we forget it, right? We go, I worked with a vendor that did all televisions and speakers and microphones, all for big consumer trade shows, right? And they just rented this out all the time for all the vendors that were going to show up at and set themselves up at a booth. And you read this stuff and you're like, where did you get this content? And they're like, we went to the manufacturers and said, send us your spreadsheet of all your descriptions of the microphones. And so you would read this description of the microphone, and it was a very technically accurate description of a microphone, none of which would cause you to say, we should rent that one. And especially as you get higher and higher, the text is almost the same with just a little like, it goes up to this decibel or handles this kind of ohms or that. And you're just like, I would never know how to get that one, right? Then when you talk to the vendor that did all this, right, that I was working with, They would say, well, we get on the phone a lot. And I go, what do you say on the phone? Well, we have to explain, hey, if you're in a booth and you're going to be projecting to 25 people, right, you're going to want this kind of mic that does this and it connects to this system. And I go, great, where is that on your website? Where is the human person who tells the story and explains it and does it casually and friendly and can even push like, hey, you can go for the cheaper model if you only want the first three rows to hear you. Like, you say that, but it's not on your website, right? So figure out how to get personality back into your content, because what happens is people read it, and more often than not, they hear it, right? They hear that tone come through, and then they feel comfortable, which causes them to trust, and trust drives the conversion, right? So there's a path, right, from writing text that has personality into it, which creates ultimately trust, which creates conversion, where you go, yeah, it makes sense. I should probably spend some time.
Yeah. And what I love about the example that you gave is that those two options are binary. Is this confident or is this cocky? There is no in between. If you read it, you can only say, oh, I'm leaning towards cocky. I should probably rewrite this and soften it up a bit or something like that. So I love that example. And what I love about this tip is it really harkens back to the first days of commerce in the bazaar or the marketplace or the port. Like, we didn't do one to many. If you're going to buy a fish, somebody's not going to say, well, this here is a 12-pound fish and it's got these, you know, this many fins or whatever, and I caught it in this area of the sea. They're going to talk to you like a real person, and they're going to say, well, this one's got a nice, light, flaky flavor, and this one's a little heavier, and it pairs well with this wine or whatever. You know, that's how commerce was done originally. And I think that with all the technology that has enabled us to do commerce at scale, which is great, we've lost some of that personal touch, or at least a lot of folks have. And to the degree that we can retain that in our stores, we're going to see better results and better performance as a result. So I love that tip that you provided. I love the personal touch being applied at scale for a brand and for a corporation that's behind an e-commerce store and for store builders. I think that has big implications for the recommendations. And if you're on that side of things, the execution that you do for your clients. So you definitely want to hone in on this tip for sure. So I think we have one more to share today. And it's all about taking it from concept to execution. And a lot of e-commerce store owners and store builders who are representing their clients who are store owners are a little too quick to publish. So what were you intending to say or communicate when you provided that tip the last time I heard it?
So I think what ends up happening is everybody tends to think that they'll write their landing pages, their product descriptions, their guarantees, their money back guarantees, or their low cost guarantees. I think they do all of that thinking, all right, I got to get this out, right? So here, let me write it out and I'll send it to you. And so we see a lot of first drafts online, right? Just a ridiculous amount of first drafts. And so my encouragement, right, is if you're a store builder and you have something that says, okay, I'm going to build this until Tuesday. And then you tell the client, now on Tuesday afternoon, I need to get content from you. And then I'll just drop it in on Wednesday. And that will allow us to make sure we run through the tests on Thursday and we'll launch on Friday. Of course, I wouldn't ever recommend launching on Friday, but let's just say that was your plan. So you get it all together. What you've really said is, I'm going to take whatever they send me and I'm just going to put it in and then we're going, right? And if it's first draft material, it's first draft material. What I recommend to store builders is, whoa, nope, don't do it. Instead, do something more like this. Okay, we're going to be done with the design design with the code on Wednesday. You're going to send us the first draft of all this content, Wednesday sometime. We're going to put it into, or Tuesday and then Wednesday, but we're going to put it into the site and we're going to look at it and see how it lays. And we're going to have you review it again. And then we're going to give you on Friday a chance to send us the revisions of the content. And then we'll put that in on Monday. And then on Tuesday, we'll validate and run tests. And on Wednesday, we can launch. The moment you do that, you are telling your customer, hey, we don't expect you to ship first drafts. Like, we expect that you will iterate. And some of them will go, oh, well, that was going to happen anyway. Like, thank God you put it in the schedule so we don't slip the schedule. Or they'll say, oh, no, we didn't. Like, I didn't have another draft. And you go, well, when you see it played out, right? When we decide that it's going to be this big font or this, that, or this layout or this, they go, oh, I probably want to tighten that up, or I want to adjust it, or I want to put more here. Create cycles for that so that you can edit and start shipping your second or third drafts or your final copy rather than your first drafts.
Yeah. And let me ask you one clarification question around that. So would you ever recommend that a store builder advise their client to get a draft, maybe a second or third iteration, but before it goes live, in front of actual customers or prospects, like maybe carve out a tiny segment of your mailing list and send them the link with a tiny little promo message or whatever, and just kind of get feedback on that. Or maybe somebody in your life, you have your wife or a friend who is in the target market, and get them to look at the copy and say, how does this make you feel? Like, what questions do you have after you read this? What's still ambiguous? How can we make this better? Would you ever recommend that?
Yes, but not in that way. So I would say, send it to them and ask, hey, I know you're interested in this, right? I wanted to give you an early access to the link to buy it before you do. What you don't want to do right, is you don't want to ask them for opinions about copy. Because when you start trying to write copy, right, in a group format, you'll get a tremendous amount of feedback. And you'll also be like, now I got to integrate all together, or now everyone's going to feel hurt. And what? So I don't want to play that game of explicitly saying, what do you think about this copy? How does this copy make you feel? But I do want to know, does it convert, right? So I go, hey, I know you're interested in these. We just got them. The store hasn't launched yet, but we got this. Do you want to grab it early, right? Here's the link. And then you just go, who bought, who didn't, right? And if they didn't buy, then you can circle back and go, hey, you got a few minutes? I'd love to know why you didn't buy. And you're like, oh, well, it was really expensive. And you go, okay, forget it. But if they go, well, I didn't know if it would do this. I wasn't sure about this. I did. That's great material to pull back, to go back and edit your copy. But do it so that they don't know that they're doing copywriting feedback, or else the thing's going to go on the rail, off the rails.
Yeah, that can spiral out of control. That makes a lot of sense. So thanks for clearing that up. I guess, you know, we could wrap it up. We covered all of our tips today, but I think if we're going to leave the folks at home with a little nugget, I know your recommendation is always take action. So I think that's, we're just going to go ahead and say, take these tips, go out and take action, apply them in use cases for your clients, or if you're building a store of your own, do it with your own store, experiment, test these things out. But if somebody has made the decision to go and take action today, which one of these areas would you recommend that they start with? Which one maybe has the biggest potential to have an impact soon, or have the largest impact over the long term? Where would you recommend that they start to get, you know, some momentum going and start improving their performance today?
If you likely don't have stories in there, I would tell you, put a story in, right? Put a story in, A/B test it, see how many people buy with the story, how many people buy without the story. It will give you feedback. It will highlight how powerful stories are, and you'll likely go back and put stories everywhere.
All right, folks. Well, there you have it. Go put some stories in your copy here at your e-commerce stores for your clients and for yourself. Chris, thank you so much for your time today. And of course, everything we talked about today, we'll hook up in the show notes. You can find the links there to all those great resources we shared. And I guess until next time, Chris, take care. And we'll see you on the next episode of the Store Builders Podcast.
Thanks. Take care, James.
All right. Have a good one.
All right, folks. So there you have it. That wraps up my conversation with Mr. Chris Lemma about the 5 common copywriting mistakes that most e-commerce store owners or e-commerce store builders make when producing their stores. And what I got the sense of is the common thread throughout most of Chris's advice was maintaining that one-to-one relationship, that personalized approach, and speaking with your customers' wants, needs, and desired outcomes in mind, and speaking less about you, your company, your product, and why it may be better than competitors in the market. So more specifically, some of the things we talked about were focusing on customers, not your product. So talking about the benefits that they stand to gain from using your product, not necessarily the specifications of your product or why it's better than competitors. We talked about using verbs instead of adjectives. So again, instead of describing what your product does or what it's like, focus on the changes that the product is going to generate in your customer's life. We talked about using stories and personality to make your brand seem less stodgy and cold and corporate and more like a trusted friend that somebody would want to buy from. And then lastly, we talked about being quick to get your message out there instead of pushing out a rough draft, kind of focusing on revisions that happen internally and taking multiple stabs at getting the copy just right, and then launching with something that you are confident in, that is polished, that is ready for prime time. In a nutshell, that's what we covered in today's episode. And what I really got out of it was, you know, this, I keep coming back to this story we told about how commerce was originally done in the marketplace. It was done at the bazaar, it was done at the port, and it was done face to face, one to one. I was looking somebody in the eye. They had some kind of product or good that I was interested in, and we were building a relationship, having a conversation. And what that conversation led to eventually was a transaction. Now, technology has enabled us to do and complete those transactions at scale, but what we lost along the way was a little bit of that personal touch. So my personal learning, or the focus that I got from Chris's advice, was do your best to maintain that personal approach and serve your customers through the copy on your website. So if I have any advice for you today, it's to take Chris's advice to heart, take it and apply it as soon as you can, and start iterating on that. Chris is a trusted authority who has plenty of experience coaching and mentoring and advising e-commerce store owners and store builders. I'm confident that if you take this advice and put it into practice,
that it's going to drive meaningful results for you, your clients, and your business. So we will be back around to talk to you soon with another great topic related to e-commerce store building. But until then, I encourage you to put this into practice and just keep driving on with your mission. Until next time, take care and drive hard.